And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, a special From My Kitchen edition. We're talking Gators with Alan Taylor. G. Alan Taylor, when you're reading him on The Athletic. George?
George. Glenn.
Glenn! All right.
Someone guessed the old style Jeff with the G.
Oh, Jeff with the G-E-O. Yeah, no.
It's Glenn.
Well, and it could be Gervon.
Gervon.
For the Florida fans.
And I was probably a teenager when Glenn Allen, one word, Glenn Allen Hill,
yeah,
came through the Cubs. And I thought, man, I ought to jam that together and have a thing.
I remember when Glenn Allen Hill came with the Blue Jays. That's that's right.
If he'd have made one more All-Star game, I probably would have changed that legally.
That would have been awesome. I would like to eliminate the space, and the judge is like, excuse me? And you just hand her the baseball card.
Exactly.
This is what we're doing here, lady. So, yeah. All right. So, Glenn Allen. If I'd have realized that, for some reason, I always thought it was George. For folks who don't know, we'll get into the Gators, but this is a question
eventually.
I've been dying to ask Alan for a long time. So, Alan was the assistant sports editor at the Chattanooga Times Free Press when I was hired to cover Tennessee there. My first job out of college in 2000. I have pieced together a pretty star-studded list of people who turned down that job.
Oh, yeah.
I was like the seventh or eighth choice. So Calvin Beam was the name of the sports editor. And when he called me, this was probably the Saturday of Labor Day weekend.
Good recall, dude.
The reason why is because I had to move pretty fast once things got going. But it's the Saturday of Labor Day weekend, and I had applied for this job like 2.5 months earlier, assumed I was definitely not getting it because nobody had called back. And out of the blue, I get a call from the sports editor of the Chattanooga Times Free Press, and he goes, well, we've been through quite a few people, and now we're down to you. And I was like, thanks, I'll take it. He's like, I'm not offering it to you. Somebody has to talk to you first.
Jeez. Is that what the Auburn hunt sounded like last year?
Exactly what that. Yeah, Brian Harsin's like, okay, I'll take it. What could possibly go wrong? But no, so I have pieced it together. Our friend George Schroeder, who used to work for USA Today, he was working for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette at the time, which was also owned by Walter Hussman
Sister
Media.
Paper. Yeah. Sure.
They asked, it was broached to him. He's like, heck no, I'm not taking that job.
Man, when you get turned down by Arkansas.
But Michael Wallace, who was covering FAMU, I think, for the Tallahassee Democrat at the time, mm-hmm. and then went on to cover some SEC teams and do a lot more in the industry. There were three or four more people who were SEC beat writers at the time or who became very prominent SEC beat writers, and they all said no. So how long is that list?
Well, that's what I want to know. What I remember is a guy who actually said yes for 48 hours coming from Oklahoma, or either he took the Oklahoma job. It's been so many.
Oh, that was George.
Was that George?
Oh, I got to talk to George
about that.
In my
head, there was another
name. That's what it was. He used that offer, I think, got him the Oklahoma beat at the Oklahoma.
Maybe that's what it was. Because I really don't remember you being far down the list at all. I remember you being, you know how you get to that top three and you're like, we'd be happy with any of these dudes. That's the way it plays in my head.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I like a little revisionist history.
It wasn't like, geez, let's go back to the stack because we've used up all our options. You know, do we have anybody with spell check on a laptop that would work?
It was interesting because I had heard, you know, through the grapevine, like, oh yeah, they called me about that. And I was like, eh. I was like, thank you. Thank you for saying, yeah, because you launched me. So,
so your first season, was it the
Casey Clawson, baby?
But was that Cotton Bowl or was that Nick Saban?
It was Cotton Bowl. They got smoked by K-State in the Cotton Bowl at the end of the 2000 season.
Oh, so I'm thinking Cotton Bowl A&M. I'm way
off. No. They got killed by K-State. The following year, they probably were the second best team in the country. They lose to Georgia in the Hobnail Boot Nail game. And then they beat Florida,
mm-hmm.
but then they lose to LSU, Nick Saban's first SEC championship. They should not have lost. They had beaten LSU
without LeBrandon Tofield, right. without Rohan Davey.
Yeah, well, knocking Rohan Davey out is what killed him, because Matt Mauk came in and
incredible.
Just... Yeah, so...
I had already booked the flight to the Rose Bowl that night.
I was booking it at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all went downhill. Because, well, and I, you know, I had graduated from Florida a year earlier, still knew all the people on the Florida beat.
Mm-hmm.
And so a week earlier, I'd been in Gainesville, and Tennessee had beaten Florida. Because, you know, that was probably Steve Spurrier's best team.
Yeah.
And so all
that was
those...
my first game in the Swamp, by
yeah.
the way.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I remember
so
that.
So loud.
Yeah, that was Travis Stevens running for 232 mm-hmm. yards or something like that. And so all the Florida beat writers, they're planning on going to the Rose Bowl. And if you cover an SEC team in 2001, the idea of ever covering a game in the Rose Bowl was just, you know, you it
pretty
would
enticing,
never happen.
Yeah.
So... they're heartbroken. Like, they didn't care who won the game, but they're heartbroken because they don't get to go cover the Rose Bowl. And I'm like, ha ha, because Tennessee already killed LSU, and there's no way that LSU is going to beat Tennessee. And then they did.
It was like the movie It Follows, where it just gets passed down exactly. to the next person.
And then you and I end up in Orlando at the Citrus Bowl. And
they destroyed Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
And every
Jason
snap
Witten
of that,
running away from yes. Michigan's entire secondary is my enduring
memory. You
just
sat there the
game.
Whole day going, what would this look like if it was in Pasadena right now? Because that could have been.
They still would have lost to Miami. Like, that Tennessee team would have lost by two touchdowns to Miami, but they would have made it closer than Nebraska did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because, you know, John Henderson and Albert Haynesworth, they were legit dudes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that D-line was great that Tennessee had. It might have been the only position group that stacked up against that Miami team, but they would have had a better shot than that Nebraska team.
And I saw John Chavis stock in the sidelines at a USFL game on Saturday, and I thought, we always thought he was going to be a head coach back then.
No,
at that point.
No. You got to like recruiting a little more than he liked it. I don't think he was a big fan. So we take you down memory lane because we have a team that Alan covers that obviously I see quite a bit of mm-hmm. here in Gainesville. The Florida Gators are in flux. They are a program in flux. Billy Napier, brand new here. He's gone through his first spring now. He's had his spring game. And I still got the sense, mm-hmm. listening to him after that spring game, Alan, that this roster is still very much a work in progress.
Yeah, I mean, you go from two, 3 years ago with people saying, we're going to look at the portal, you have to look at it, to him openly saying, we're going to be open for business. We want anybody who can crack our two deep to come mm-hmm. in. And that's not, you know, that's not a veiled blow at all. That's the two deep needs some help. You had walk-ons playing the other day early, not like scrub minutes at the end. And I don't know if there's two or three starters in September that still aren't here. I know that would probably be their preference. I'm not sure they can get that quality out of the portal this late.
Right.
But there are that many jobs that will be open.
And that's what's fascinating to me about the portal, because it's not going to be a secret that there are spaces available mm-hmm. at Florida. And so how enticing is that to somebody? Because I'm trying to figure out what type of person is going to go for that. Now, you can't come from another SEC school to Florida, because you had to be in the portal by February 1st if you wanted to transfer in conference and play right away. But anybody who's in the portal by May 1st from another conference could do it. So would we be talking about like a really good player from an American team, from a MAC team, from a Sun Belt team who says, I want to go play and try it in the SEC? Or would this be a guy who couldn't get playing time on a good Big Ten team or on mm-hmm. a good ACC or Pac-12 team who says, okay, maybe I can play there because they've got some spots that seem open.
Mm-hmm. You like those guys who have overachieved and have earned a spot versus the guys who can't play somewhere else on your level right. and are dropping down. Those exist, right?
Well, Jamison Williams, he couldn't play. Yeah. It's just that he looked at the receiver room in Ohio State and was like, oh my God, this is the most stacked room in the world.
Yeah.
Let me go be a star anywhere else.
He 10 years from now, he still may be the poster child for why to get it in the portal and how to turn that into millions, right?
Yeah.
The funny thing is, we know there's tampering going on. We know there are programs and ex-coaches reaching out to guys and literally pulling them. I think what Napier's done is simply post a job vacancy.
That's it.
And say, if you want to come, these are the spots we need. And you don't have to tamper. you see who gets in the portal, and Lord knows I've got a group of guys focused on that.
I think you're going to see that from a lot of different programs, especially programs with new coaches. You know, and what everybody wants is what Michigan State did. But the thing about Mel Tucker and Michigan State is that was year two. You know, he had such a weird situation because he was hired so late and then COVID hit. So it kind of felt like it was year one for him.
Yeah.
But he had actually had plenty of time to evaluate the roster, figure out what they need, and then go get it.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, Billy Napier has not had that much time to evaluate and then portal recruit in that direction. So I think you're right. I don't think suddenly they're going to have a super deep receiving room or a super deep linebacker room just because they said, hey, these jobs are open.
Yeah. What it can do is you can find, you know, they took a project from Louisiana and Cameron Waits,
yes,
the backup right tackle. The kid had not played much high school football. He's 6'7", didn't get on the field last year at Louisiana at all. So you bring him in. Sorry, he wasn't at Louisiana last year, but he was a commitment or signee. So I think they can also build that way so that they're helping out 2023, 2024. But I'm telling you, I know there's this, I feel like within our company even, there's this feeling that, oh, well, Florida will just snap back.
Yeah, I don't get that.
And I don't get that 9 or 10 wins because Napier's there. There will be a culture shift.
Yep.
That'll be good. But culture shifts don't track down SEC receivers and block Will Anderson.
And know? I think what makes Florida weird and what makes this whole situation weird is they were so successful in the first 3 years under Dan Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard to look at it and say, this roster is not good enough to compete in the SEC. But it isn't. And that is primarily why Dan Mullen got fired. It's why he got fired when he got fired. The people in charge looked at the roster and said, oh, so this is a problem that goes back several years, but it was being masked by the results thanks to Kyle Trask, Kyle Pitts, and Dan Mullen being a very good on-field strategist. So that's the part that I think people from outside probably miss, is that this was a problem for a few years that maybe didn't get recognized until it was too late.
Yeah, like you see the supply chain issues.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Before the shelves are empty, you know?
All the players are sitting in the port, or sitting off the port of Los Angeles, just waiting to be unloaded.
Exactly. So you know, and plus I think at one point last year, going into last year, Florida's talent ranking, once you added transfers, was top seven. Their recruiting overall wasn't.
Right.
But their portal guys like Justin Shorter coming in elevated their talent
Justin
level.
Justin Shorter, Lorenzo Lingard, DeMarcus Bowman, those are 3 5-stars.
Yeah, so that really helps
but
your ranking.
But you're not getting 5-star production
out
of them.
You're
now,
not.
Shorter is going to produce.
Yeah, Shorter will be
produced.
A starter. DeMarcus, you know, a couple fumbles the other night. They're still waiting for him to break out. He's the fastest running back they have, or slipperiest. And Lingard is the fastest point A to B, but he doesn't have enough wiggle to make guys miss. And he pulled a hammy the other night. So we'll see what they get out of those guys. But the roster right now is less talented than it was a year ago today. And that doesn't mean it's a worse team. I'm just saying that the speed at receiver is not there. The depth at some positions, even on the defensive front, is not there.
Well, and like linebacker, like Mahmoud Diabate, he's going to be starting for Utah when Utah shows up in the Swamp for the season opener. They would die to have him. Mm-hmm. They would love to have him back. But he you know, looked at it and was like, okay, I'm gonna go try somewhere else. And, you know, look, I don't blame anybody who's been in a program for a while where their coach gets fired and maybe you want to go look for something else. But they just don't have the guys that they used to have. And like in the Muschamp years, it was a case of coaching them, not necessarily a case of the raw talent being there. I feel like maybe I've been a little unfair to Jim McElwain because maybe they were more competitive roster-wise. But I looked at them losing to Florida State the way they did when Jimbo had it going at Florida State and thinking, okay, they're not talented enough to compete for national titles with this group.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they would have been had they kept going, but it didn't seem like it. And then you look at Georgia and Alabama and the LSU team that won the national title, and you go, no, none of those teams would have competed with them.
Which is the big anomaly of the whole thing is that somehow it's 52-46 in Atlanta.
Yes, they were that close.
And then last year it's 31-29 in the Swamp, and either one of those games go the other way, and quite frankly, you probably don't have a coaching change because of the butterfly effect that goes down. But overall, there's no disputing that Florida played above their heads those nights to stay on the field with those guys. So I think Florida right now is...
And also, they do have some very good players.
Yeah, they're on the... Yeah. When we say they can't compete in the SEC, they can't compete to win it. They can compete to be 500 in the SEC and maybe 7-5. Maybe ceiling for me would be 8-4, but I'm thinking more 6-6.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I do think there is a way for them to be better than people think. That there's one great equalizer, and Ari and I talk about this on the show all the time. If you have a special quarterback, it makes all the difference. It changes all the math. My question is whether Anthony Richardson can be that, because from a tool standpoint, you look at him and you go, this guy is 6'5", he's 240, he can run, he throws, because usually those big guys, they don't throw the ball with ease. They've got some sort of weird like sidearm motion, or he throws the ball well.
Yeah.
And then, but we've only seen him in, you know, spurts, and you've seen flashes of brilliance, and you've seen stuff that makes you go, oh, I don't know if he's ready. But can he develop into that guy?
Well, everybody, you know, proceeds a throne journey, right? He's in the same year developmentally as Bryce Young is, and you would think they're on different planets developmentally.
Right.
But that's fine. I mean, Kyle Trask was probably 4 years in before he got his break, so that's not a big thing. Mac Jones,
right?
Obviously.
Felipe Franks is one that everybody in the recruiting world said, this guy needs 3 years in your program before you put him on the field. Mm-hmm. Florida put him on the field in year two, and you saw what happened.
Yeah, and with Anthony, you know, I don't even think it's a tool thing because the tools are all there, right? It's simply who has he showed out against? He looked really good against FAU, USF, and LSU.
Right.
Those are the three things.
That LSU defense was not great. Yeah.
Those are the three that you're hanging your hat on. Georgia? No, never had a shot to get anything going. Couldn't be a difference maker. And, you know, didn't do a lot against FSU, although obviously they won the ball game. So we'll see what he can do. He's got to make a huge leap. I know the staff looked at him, and they had the same moment that a lot of us have, which is, oh, crap, that's legit body. Yes. That's a legit Superman-type body.
I think
let's make it work.
He's one that any coach in the world will come in and say, I can work with him. I can fix whatever issues I can fix. Whether that happens or not is another story. But he's one he'll get as many chances as he can get. Now, don't need to be driving so fast.
Oh my goodness!
That's right on the road out here where that happened.
I was wondering how far that is from the Staples residence.
Yeah. Because
I was trying to put together the...
That part of Newbury Road really invites you to open it up. I'm not going to lie. I might have sped on that.
Wasn't there an LSU player once who got arrested for driving 135 in a school zone? He said, I had to get rid of some bad gas. I just pumped in $3 of bad gas and I was trying to flush it out.
That's
that's going back like three decades.
Yeah, see, that's bad.
That's an all-time excuse.
The school zone thing. Like, at least this was on a road where I think the speed limit's 60.
And he had a mandatory breakfast coming up, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. Well,
at 6 a.m.
But no, and that's what I couldn't figure out is that a good thing or a bad thing for the dealership that has the NIL deal? Because you've shown the capability of the vehicle, but not in the best way that you possibly could have.
If only the police report had said it went from 0 to 105 in 3 seconds, then I think Anthony could
and
have
I realize spun we're making light, we're having fun. I've been that age driving way too fast. Mm. I also live near where he got pulled over, and if I were driving out there at 4 a.m., would be stunned to see a cop. So that part of it is it doesn't excuse it, but I'm not going to destroy the guy right now. This is not a Henry Ruggs situation where he was, Henry Ruggs was blackout drunk and all that. So this is one where it's a mistake, and it's one of those things that you got to be careful when you're Florida's quarterback, because I think that's one of those, if he's the starting left guard, that's not even news. Nobody cares.
True. And it's one of these things where you start stacking it on what happened last year. Injured his leg dancing. Repeated.
I could not have done that.
Comments. Neither could he, apparently. Yeah. Repeated comments by Garrett McGee that the guy needed to grow up and be mature. Same thing from Dan Mullen based on playing time. That was clearly the message he was sending. So you added on to last year, and suddenly you're like, okay, has he made that jump yet to where he's ready to be the face of the program and do all the things? I've seen the guy out at Celebration Point just hanging and signing autographs, and you would have thought he was an NFL guy the way he handled it and did all that. Yeah. So I don't think it's this big pervasive issue.
The dealing with fans, and that's where he seems to have that part kind of down. So that's the thing. He's kind of the key to everything. Yeah. Because if he's good, then they can be better. Then they can beat Utah. They can beat Kentucky. Mm-hmm. If he's average, they won't beat Utah. They won't beat Kentucky. And people will act like the sky is falling, even though they've probably... See, I got on Feinbaum the other day and said that Florida has the toughest opening duo of any school in the country. And people are like, oh, what are you talking about? And I'm like, have you any of you watched Utah play? Like, they kicked Oregon's ass twice last year. And Oregon has a really good roster, especially up front. So this is not a soft team that's good. This is a team that will kick your butt if you're not ready for them.
And they spent the Rose Bowl playing with running backs at corner?
Yes. Yeah, and they had to Cam Rising went out and they had to put the backup quarterback in. He throws a touchdown pass.
And that's the program that's had the same coach, has some continuity, has some expectations. I still think that's one that Florida might steal based on pure energy and the fact that Utah will not have seen what Florida's got, whereas everyone after
also
that
might
will
be
have
noon
something.
In August or September.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the date is.
What's the reverse of
it's hot.
Playing at altitude? Yeah, yeah. It's just the other thing.
It's real hot playing at 100% humidity. So, yeah, that part, I think Florida may have a shot there. Kentucky, we'll see what Kentucky is, but they changed offensive coordinators. He went back. Liam Cohen went back to the Rams, but they brought in somebody from the 49ers. Same tree, essentially. I had Will Levis on the radio the other day. He said it's very similar, that they've not had much trouble picking it up. So I would expect Kentucky comes in into Gainesville pretty tough. Tennessee is going to be just hair on fire ready for Florida at this point. And that's what Florida's dealing with now. Like, they're still... Like with Tennessee, they're still the team that beats up on them all the time. That Tennessee's only beaten once since 2004. And they're going to be out to get them.
Yeah.
And if you're not good and they're better, that's a tough spot to be in.
That game last year, I think that was coming off the Alabama game, I believe. Yeah. And they just destroyed them in the swamp. Tennessee had two breakaway plays that basically
early on,
did most of their stuff, and that was it. That's the one that you really... made you feel like, well, they learned from the Alabama game and Florida was on a trajectory to win.
Yeah, that game doesn't make any sense because the two teams went completely opposite directions after that game.
Mm-hmm. It's probably the guys who were doing the bicycle on the sidelines. I think it's some sort of weird karma there. Yeah, that game didn't make any sense. Always good. I like that Tennessee-Florida rivalry. I hope that when this inevitable three primary opponents thing comes with Oklahoma, Texas, that Tennessee-Florida remains one of the
ones. I'm curious about that because that was a product of divisions, the rivalry itself, and it became a great rivalry because Tennessee and Florida happened to be the best two teams in the league at the time. But it has become a fun... the thing is it fun to Tennessee? Because, you know, even when Tennessee was really good in the 90s, Florida still won most of the games.
The hump they couldn't get over most years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know Florida Georgia's there. I would like to see Florida LSU stay, but I don't know if Florida's three will be Tennessee, Georgia,
LSU. I don't
think
Florida wants that, and I don't think LSU wants it either. But
the SEC, that is a marquee game.
It is, but...
And to give it away half the years in exchange for Florida, South Carolina?
But I would want LSU playing... So I want LSU playing A&M every year.
Sure.
I want that.
And Ole Miss.
Because they hate each other. Like, I want that hatred. I'd then put LSU with, like, Oklahoma or Texas.
Well, this is the problem with SEC football when you start doing this. LSU-Alabama not being played every year is a completely foreign concept to me. And somehow that could happen if Alabama goes. There's always a trail, right? If a wormhole.
Alabama will have Tennessee and Auburn sure.
For sure.
And then who else they have?
And then either LSU or Mississippi State. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's going to be that. I'm telling you that those meetings in Destin or wherever in Birmingham where they figure that out will be a fistfight. And then the jockeying to get Vandy in your three. Because Tennessee's going to be sitting here going, well, I mean, in-state rival, come on.
How about them? Yeah, that's got to happen. There's so many things because you pick your three in a vacuum and then you realize it screws up another three from over here.
Well, and you also just can't, like, because you could make Auburn the most miserable place to play in the history because they have rivalries with everybody. Like, Florida fans would love to play Auburn every year.
That used to be a big one.
That was one of the fan base's favorite rivalries, went away because of the way the divisions worked out. But if you're Auburn, you're like, no, please, no, because you got to have Alabama and Georgia. So, like, you got to give Auburn Vandy with Alabama and Georgia as the other ones.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you're looking at it, too. You're not going to duck anybody for 7 or 8 years like you used to. It's going to be a revolving 2-year deal.
Everybody you don't see, you're still going to see them twice every 4 years.
Yeah, and if you go to a 9-game schedule, obviously, then it sort of mitigates the fact that you might have three really tough teams. It's going to be interesting to play out because somebody's going to get stuck with one that makes zero sense, like South Carolina, Arkansas, or something just dumb, and you're like...
South Carolina and Arkansas, they're like, you came in at the same time.
You did. So you both were the last two to pick up your name tags, so you're in the table, exactly. Playing poker in the back. So it doesn't make sense. I hope they can find a way to do it that doesn't sever a couple of really good rivalries.
Yeah, it will be fascinating, but it will start some new ones, too, like... Who does Oklahoma end up having beef with? Who does Texas end up having? Well, we know Texas A&M will end up having beef together. But, you know, who else do they pick up? Do they suddenly, like, I just want some weird, like, Texas-Mississippi State rivalry to form where they just hate each other.
Cowbells and Bevo, and they're trying to get the guy jump-started. I mean, what if something Texas-Florida happens? You got the two biggest recruiting states in the footprint, and they have to play every year. I mean, that could be something that it wouldn't make sense. From what we know, but
who would say no? Like, who says no to that? Florida fans, would you like to go to Austin every other year? Like, they'll do that.
It'd be incredible. I mean, all the the kids that Florida tries to recruit out of Texas, some with success, some not so much. It's just right there, man. And you could the recruiting sidelines and the visitors' passes at those games would be pretty spectacular.
Be a hot ticket. Well, let's talk about that with Billy Napier because. The reason Florida spring game was on a Thursday, let's be honest, it wasn't because they wanted the students there because they were leaving for Easter. Easter was on Sunday in Alabama and Georgia too, but Alabama and Georgia had their spring games. And if you try to, compete against that, a lot of the people you want to come are not going to pick you if you're where Florida is right now. And I thought it was an interesting gesture of humility on the part of the old Gators who have not been given to gestures of humility over the years. And if you looked at the sideline during the spring game and after the spring game, they had a significant number of players that they wanted to come see and wanted to get a chance to talk to.
Yeah, 300 plus. I mean, you know, you're talking 2-3 classes down. I think there might have even been an 8th or 9th grader there in the stands as well. Why not? I mean, you're going to be on ESPN Plus or SEC Network Plus streaming on Saturday. Why not at least have that full exposure on Thursday night to do it that way? So I think it worked out. It was actually perfect weather. Saturday during the day would not have been any better. And I think it gave you that window, and that came a year after Mullen didn't want to have any spring game and was one of three schools in the SEC that just ran some sort of stock behind the scenes junk that wasn't even watchable and really missed an opportunity there to recruit.
Well, they missed an opportunity to recruit and an opportunity to engage with their fans. Like, that's one thing I all of these coaches need to understand, that they're in the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. And the season tickets at Georgia and Alabama sell themselves. They used to sell themselves at Florida, too. Mm-hmm. They don't anymore. Mm-hmm. You need to find a way to get these people excited and get them engaged and get them to fall in love with your team. And, you know, I think Billy Napier, for the most part, has done and said the right things to that effect. But they need to find a way to advertise this thing a little more. And
yeah.
Now, winning solves mm-hmm. all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But in the absence of that, and like you said, it may be a year before they feel like the roster's in a place where they can win like that. Mm-hmm. So, I'll be curious to see what they do here in the next, you know, 4 or 5 months to kind of get the word out. Because that stuff with the fans, it also generates buzz with recruits. You know, and I do think, you know, you look at Kamari Wilson was a good example of right after Billy Napier gets in. This is sure. a player who Georgia wanted, who picked Florida. That hasn't happened very much lately. And it does seem like he's going to be going head-to-head or attempting to go head-to-head with Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, schools like that. You haven't seen Florida beating them out for players much. Mm-hmm. If they can, who knows?
Yeah, and the reason that thing was on a streaming subscription service this time was the move came so late.
It moved. They'd already scheduled softball,
What's to prevent Billy from talking this out a year and 2 years in the future, saying we'll take that Thursday every year, and we'll actually be on the SEC network
and mic me up like you mic up Nick Saban, that's the thing. I mean, he seems to have a personality that people seem to like, mm-hmm. so why not?
He's accommodating. I mean, to the extent that we had coffee in the press box for the first time in 2 years,
I'm gonna give Rick Hurtado the nod on that one. Rick Hurtado, Florida's sports information director. Got tossed into a fairly tough situation when he got the job and, you know, coming out in spades. We'll be right back after these words.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
You know, Rick's worried about the media experience, just like Billy's worried about the player experience.
The player experience, and that has been a topic. I mean, they've got all these new staffers. You did a really good story on Katie Turner, who they hired away from Georgia, who's kind of she pretty much runs recruiting for them.
Yeah.
And I'm curious because the number itself is not as big as everybody thinks. Like, it was about 15% larger staff. Mm. But it feels like the roles are more clearly defined.
Yeah, and he does have something like 20 student interns positions that Mullen didn't make use of. But it also, you say, well, big deal, student interns. That's what Pickler was at Clemson. That's how Katie Turner got started at Alabama to some degree. That's how Bird Sherrill got started. I think he's...
Bird Sherrill's in the, basically one of their transfer portal guys.
Yeah, portal guy who came from the Detroit Lions and had been in Alabama cutting up film, and he puts together a plan if some guy goes in the portal to who needs to contact him within 2 hours and get that ball rolling. That's his full job. Those numbers of the students will push it up more, but the paying positions are very clearly defined. The flow chart is there, and everybody knows what they've got to do, and they can really focus on that and do it well.
That's the thing. I remember talking to Nick Saban about that back in 2012 for a story I was doing on his organizational structure, and he said once a year he evaluates not just the people in the organization but the positions, and basically rewrites the job description for each one. And I thought, man, because we've worked at some places where they don't really give you a clear picture of exactly what they want from you. Mm-hmm. And as an employee, that would make my job a lot better.
Yeah.
Like just say, here's what we want.
And here's how to gauge and measure your success.
Actually, The Athletic is probably the best of the media companies I've worked for at explaining that to us. Like that's not something that was explained very well in other places.
No, it wasn't. And some years you'd be covering a state tournament in high school, and some years you'd be covering a pro golf tournament. It was just like, who's available and who's not on vacation that week versus this is what you can do, so you can plan it out 11-12 months in advance and get on it. And that's what he's done, is add people, but not just people for the sake of people. He added them with specific roles, and I think that's why Scott Strickland zeroed in on him really after one meeting, which you can say, hey, you should have taken a bigger swing.
He was zeroed in on before that one meeting. It seemed like he was the guy. And look, obviously Scott Strickland had been doing due diligence. I think it's pretty clear that the due diligence began after the South Carolina loss last year. Mm-hmm. And they were starting to kind of cut down that list. And Napier's one that it was interesting in SEC circles because he kicked the tires on South Carolina. He'd gone down the road a little bit with Auburn when those jobs were open. And
in Mississippi State,
so rarely does someone stay at the Sun Belt job
mm-hmm.
when even one of those is a possibility. So, he was looking for the right situation, and he felt like this was the one. So I will be fascinated to see what he does, because it does seem like, and this is, everybody keeps asking, well, now they're going to compete with Alabama and Georgia, right? And I'm like, they've now gotten the cost of admission paid. Or, mm-hmm. So they're doing the baseline. Whether that works or not is whether you're good enough to out-recruit Kirby Smart or Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. But at least you're in a fair fight.
Yeah. And, I keep bringing up this facility, and I keep getting kicked because I've been referencing it for a year or two. But that's going to be a huge thing.
That's the last – I call that the last excuse.
Yeah.
You build that facility – you have the same kind of facilities as everybody else. It takes that excuse away, and then you should feel like you're on a level playing field at that point.
For that team to come in, or for that staff to come in, you could not arrive at a better time, because you're going to be compared to a staff that didn't have it, and now you do have it, and you know how to maximize things, and from the top down, better recruit relationships than Mullen did. So that'll help. But you got to go out there and win them. And when NIL dollars start flowing, are you in that same salary pool?
Yeah,
as the bigger schools
and that's
are.
That's another one where again, taking away the last excuse, because a lot of Florida people get high. Well, we don't do that. You did that before, maybe not to the extent of other places, but I mean, you played the game just like everybody in the SEC plays the game. But now that there's no stigma, just go do it like mm-hmm. that. That's what Alabama and Georgia are going to do. That's what Tennessee's doing. Like, just the rules have changed.
Yeah.
Adapt.
Yeah. And they'll change again in 2 or 3 years to some degree. But for now, you can't get left behind. And we'll see what the Gator Collective, what market price and outfits like that can get accomplished. But it wasn't supposed to be for performance, but it is for performance.
Everybody knew that it was
be. And and I don't even know why we're dancing around. I saw someone criticizing Tennessee for allegedly giving someone $8 million. And I said, well, it's their salary cap. Let them distribute it like they want.
If you wanted players to get paid,
and now you're telling them they're getting paid too much.
Yeah.
I mean, you open the capitalistic market to these guys, and it's going to be what it is.
If he doesn't wind up being good, then they wasted their money. And that's, listen, there's an entire industry where people start companies and people invest in those companies, And most of those companies don't work. But every once in a while, they go gangbusters. Yeah. And the venture capitalist makes their money back and then some. So it's not that different. It's really what we're talking about here. So,
and again, a lot of this money had been under the table at places, and now it's coming above the table and it's traceable. So I don't understand why there's suddenly a pearl clutching over the amount of dollars that a quarterback gets. Although I understand a 17-year-old kid who's never produced in college, probably not worth it, but that's what the market says he's worth today.
It's not my money. Like, you want to spend your money on that? Yeah. I'm not going to criticize.
I mean, do you know what news anchors get paid? Do you know what these actors get paid
exactly.
for showing up and putting on an Iron Man suit for 2 minutes? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm going to invest that money in a steak because I get a steak. But that, if you want to invest it in a quarterback, then you go right ahead. That's your money. So we'll see what happens. But I am fascinated by what this group is going to do, because Billy Napier seems to have laid out a very coherent plan and seems to have put people in places where they can execute that plan. Mm-hmm. But what makes it difficult is there's somebody in Athens already executing it at the highest level. There's somebody in Tuscaloosa already executing it at the highest level. The guy who just got hired at Miami has the same plan, apparently has the same checkbook available to him now, which I never would have thought Miami would do. And he has some very talented people to execute that plan. It ain't going to be easy.
It's not.
They're not all going
to
win.
It's not. And it's not, you go back to Saban, they lost to La Monroe his first year, and they barely cracked 500 at the end, and then they immediately turned it around. I don't know that Florida is even a two-year rebuild to that extent of being in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, to where you're very competitive at the national level.
It might be year three before they can reasonably be expected to beat Georgia and be in there. And that would mean some really good 2023 freshmen producing.
Well, it also would mean a Michigan State-style turnaround in the portal, and that's what Nick Saban didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
He had to put together maybe the best recruiting class of all time in 2008. You don't have to be that. You have to get really good recruits in 2023 if you're Billy Napier, but you don't have to be perfect. Like, there are going to be guys you can get out of the portal. And if your team plays hard, even if they're not great, but if they play hard, they seem to be enjoying playing there, other players see that. I think that's one thing with the Mel Tucker thing. They only won two games in 2020, but they were they beat Michigan and they beat Northwestern. It was maybe the two best teams on their schedule other than Ohio State. I can't remember if that game got played in 2020.
It's like, did they play five or six games that year?
Yeah. So they kind of played above played out of their shoes on those games, and the players seemed to like playing for Mel Tucker. I don't think it was an accident that that was a place some good players wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Billy Napier, you got to create that environment where players talk, word gets around, hey, this is a place where you can maximize yourself. That would help, and that would allow you to turn it around quicker. So
yeah, you're talking about better food, you're talking about better housing. There's an initiative to get those guys in better athletic housing facilities, and obviously the great last excuse, as you well put it, on the standalone football facility. All that's there, and that's stuff that doesn't just benefit you during the fall. That's stuff that benefits you every day you're on campus and makes life better and makes you more productive and helps get you to the league if you're willing to jump in on it.
Yeah, so I will be fascinated to see what they do, because they're going to have the tools in place, especially once that the facility's in, because that is something that everybody's used against Florida, and with good reason. I mean, a lot of the other SEC programs have had facilities like this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something that has been used against the Gators. I can't use it. And we'll see. They got a bunch of good players in the state, bunch of people in the transfer portal, probably. The question is, what can they do in the next few months to make sure that first year goes? That will be one of the more interesting side plots of SEC football, is who do the SEC teams like Florida get over the next month or two coming out of spring practice from other leagues, and who exits those SEC teams to other leagues? Because I think Florida, as you mentioned, they're going to be a lot flowing both ways.
Yeah. And outside of the Big Ten, I think every college football player in America realizes that if you go to the SEC, you're taking a massive step up. They call it big boy football for a reason. So, you know, the ACC schools, the Pac-12 schools, Big 12 schools are definitely there. And as you mentioned earlier, the group of five teams that might feed up.
If you're recruiting in the SEC into the portal, you can say, look, this is a bet on yourself proposition. Mm-hmm. If you play well here, your draft stock will be very high. And that's and obviously you can get drafted out of any FBS league. We will see somebody drafted from every mm-hmm. FBS league. We'll see people drafted from the group of five in the first round. But the SEC has had the most draft picks every year. If you're good in the SEC, the NFL will find you and probably pick you early. So if I'm Billy Napier, I'm selling that real, real hard in these next few weeks.
It's there. It's there. But, you know, that's the thing. I've never heard a coach refer to post-spring as exit interviews. I've heard him say exit interviews in December. Yeah. I've never heard exit interviews used.
That's because they plan on some people exiting. That's like, exactly right.
That's about 3 months past the December. Yeah. We got two rounds of exit interviews now. So yeah.
Yeah, that's they're planning on some people exiting. That's why. We'll see who that is, and we'll see who they bring in. And Alan will be here writing about all of it. I'll be writing about it, and it's a time of change in Gainesville.